Om Shanti. Very nice to see a lot of old friends. And what was very nice this year, they introduced all the first-timers, so you feel like old friends already. So that was a very nice thing they did this year. So first of all, logistics. So are you comfortable? It's very lovely having this fresh air, but maybe getting a bit cool. Do you want the windows closed? No? Okay, you close them when you feel cold, especially those sitting nearby. But it's really a lovely room that they've given us. Sorry for the very formal seating, but we didn't know how many, and we don't know the language situation. So the Vietnamese have organized themselves. Does anyone else need translation? Or anyone else need translation? Okay. Anyone find English difficult? Just put up your hands so we can just see. If you find English, you can understand, but we should be careful. Yeah, a little bit difficult. So maybe quite a few. So I will try to keep it simple. But also when we break up, if everyone can be aware that we come from many, many different countries sitting here. So just keep whatever you say simple so that others can understand. That would be good for everyone because we want to understand each other. So it's actually not mystic at the edge, it's mystics because we're all mystics. But we're going to explore whether we're really mystics a little bit later. So sorry we lost half a day, but we didn't want to anyone to miss meeting who we call Uncle. We always used to call Nuebai Uncle. He was our agony aunt. Agony aunt means any problem we go to him. So he wasn't our auntie, he was our uncle. So I'm glad that many of you got to meet him today. And this evening we're just going to go into the topic a little bit, and there is a program on the wall so you can see what will happen. But tomorrow we will go a little bit deeper, and also we will have a little silence time and picnic in Daddy Janky Park. So, you know, we'll get to know each other a little bit, but also some silence time to reflect, because it is quite a deep topic. So I'm going to check in. Can you understand me? Anyone having problem? Okay. All right. Good. So one thing I wanted to start with is to talk about the stages of spiritual development. And a lot of what I share is mixed from what I've read from books. So actually Scott Peck talks about community development. And this book was given to me when our center was in a little bit of a crisis. And I found it so helpful. It really addressed what was happening. So basically there's four stages of spiritual development, generally. Of course, it's not the same for everyone, but generally. So often, when we come to Baba, we are a little bit lost. It's called chaos. How many were lost when they came to Baba? Yeah, quite a few. Quite a few. So we are quite happy to belong to something. One thing is we feel that we don't belong in this world. How many BKs felt like that? You didn't belong in this world. So we had that from childhood. We felt we didn't belong. And then we try to fit into this world and we're very confused. We don't know how to fit into a world that's not ours. Right? This is not our world. Golden Age is our world. And often we have come into problems in relationships, and we just don't understand what's going on. And so, very often we become happy to be kind of institutionalized. What I mean by that in this context is we're quite happy for people to tell us what to do, how to do it, and we just, because we didn't know how to do anything. We were really quite lost. And also we want to belong. So we wear the clothes. We wear Indian clothes, eat Indian food, listen to Indian songs, because we want to belong. We want to fit in. We want to feel a part. But very often it happens, and especially Dr. Nirmala will say, 7 years. I don't know now because things are speeding up, but generally she would always say after 7 years, everything changes. It's just like children growing up. How old are they usually? About seven, when they maybe earlier. But they really want to have their own identity. And this is also important. It's important to what we call, I don't know their simple word, actualize. To be who we are, you know, but in the meantime, we're happy to be institutionalized. But when we start to kind of wake up and we start to look around and thinking, what am I doing? Why am I wearing these clothes? Why am I eating this food? Why am I listening to this music? And we think, what's going on here? Did anyone go through that stage? Yes, already. How many years? Took you 10 years or 7? Was it 7? 6? Yeah, close. Did is pretty right. So there comes a time when we start to question. And that creates often not just chaos for ourselves, but for our center. That's what was happening in our center in Hong Kong, that many of the students were at that time where they were questioning everything, you know, not wanting a center coordinator, not wanting me to listen to the seniors but to listen to them. They said, we're a family. You don't listen to us. Why are you listening to the seniors? You know, all of these things start to come up. And it is healthy. It's healthy. There's no problem. It is healthy to start to question and become aware of what I am doing, because it means I'm starting to think, who am I and what do I want, not just follow. So we shouldn't get worried about that if it happens in our center, if it happens to ourselves. And even Baba says to us, consider what I'm saying, consider what others are saying, and judge for yourself. You know, so it's a time when we really need to apply, you know, to really practice all of this and see whether it works for us. We can explore other things and compare and see what really works for me. And because you're all here, I think you have all worked out that this works for you. But interestingly, I have quite a background in Buddhism, and I still have an interest. I have a lot of notes, and I do study Buddhism in a sense of, like, I think Buddha was a very good meditation teacher, and there's a lot of parallels. But also because I've lived in Buddhist countries, and usually I'm interacting with Buddhist people, so I need to understand what they are thinking, what they believe. So from that angle, I've also studied quite a bit of Buddhism. When I meditated on several occasions and had deep insight, the deep insight was often, I am nothing and no one. And if anyone knows Buddhism, that's very Buddhist. So at one point I thought, maybe I am a Buddhist. This was after maybe 15 years. No, I am. Maybe I don't belong to the BKs. I'm a Buddhist. I thought that, maybe. And it was a good thought because it challenged, in a way, my attachment to the BKs. You know, like I was just questioning, well, what if I am? What if I'm not a BK? What if I'm actually a Buddhist? And I thought, whatever it is, I have to be myself, you know. So it's better to find out sooner rather than later, because then we can get on our path, you know. So, but it was very interesting to question that after being very, what we call pucker and teaching for so many years. What if I am a Buddhist? And even that, I thought, if I am, I am. I am going to be me because that's who I am, and that's what's important, because that's truth. So not to be afraid. And I think it helps in our faith, because when we go through these things, not that that was very serious, but it was just interesting. But when we challenge our beliefs, we become clearer. And Mike George says something very, very interesting. In every belief, there is a lie. You see the word B-E-L-I-E-F? How interesting is that? In every belief, there is a lie. And there's another very clever little slogan that says, I may be wise, I may be otherwise. So never to be too sure, you know? Don't be too sure in the sense of like stubborn, narrow, you know? I may be wise, I may be otherwise. So it's a good thing to remember, because one thing about spirituality is that it embraces it is often the case that there are paradoxes. A paradox means things that seem opposite go together very well, you know? So we have to look at and, not or. It's not this or that. It's this and that. And even Jagdish Pai, you know, Baba says so much about the greatest illusion or the greatest mistake is the concept of omnipresence, right? Omnipresence. So one time he wrote a list of 100 reasons why God is omnipresent, and 101 reasons why he is not. But I quite like that, because I like the feeling of omnipresence. The feeling of omnipresence is very beautiful. But the fact, as far as I understand, is that God is not omnipresent. But we can enjoy a lot of truths and just, you know, find that little edge there, because we can experience a lot of things like that. Do you know what I mean? So, and in fact, interestingly, because I like omnipresence, when I met Baba, he said to me personally in a personal meeting, wherever you look, you only see Baba. So someone said, so Baba is omnipresent. And Baba said, listen to this, for Brahmins at the confluence age, Baba is omnipresent. I was so happy. I was so happy. So, but of course we know factually something, right? But the experience, like I feel Baba's in the walls, you know, like I can feel the omnipresence, but I know the fact. Don't worry, I know the fact. So when we start to doubt and to question and to explore, that's when we are starting on our journey to become a mystic. Because a mystic is someone who has experiences. They don't just believe because someone has said, but they actually have the experience of that. And when we know from our experience, we know on a very different level, right? When we know because Baba said, then it's one thing. But when we know because Baba said and we have applied it, we have experienced it, the knowing goes into being. The knowing becomes our being. It doesn't just stay at the level of the head, but it's much deeper than that. And one time when we were sitting in front of Baba in Madhuban, Baba said, "Do you all have faith?" So of course I think we were sitting there thinking, "Well, what do you think we're doing here if we don't have faith?" Right? Baba asked, "Do you have faith?" Don't you think it's a funny question when you're sitting in front of Baba and you've been celebrating, getting up at 4 o'clock and for years? And he said, there's a difference between faith in the intellect, faith and faith in your experience, faith in your being. And he also said, so we all said we all have faith. And somebody said, you know, they honestly said, maybe I have a percentage of faith. And Baba asked, can there be a percentage in faith? Interesting, huh? Can there be? Yeah, I think what it aligns with is this thing Baba was saying. We all have faith. We all understand. We believe. But we don't necessarily experience. Like we're number-wise in... Because Baba said, when we said we all have faith, right? Then Baba said, the sign of faith is to be unshakable and immovable. So are you all unshakable and immovable? No one could say yes, right? We all use our faith to help us to be unshakable and immovable, but it's a sign that we still need another level of faith, not just here, but really in, so that it's so deep it's unshakable. And this is the sign of a mystic. You know, like they talk about Mira. Mira was the number one devotee, and they tested her. Because she didn't want to get married. She said, I'm married to Krishna. So she wouldn't get married. And they told her to walk on fire. And she could walk on fire without burning because, you know, things like this. Like there's these stories. So, you know, if we've really got faith, then it's something that is unshakable. But that's the journey of the mystic. So the one thing that probably defines a mystic is that they have that faith. And often, you know, there's a few very famous mystics. You know, there's in Christianity especially, because a lot of the mystics, you know, have a connection with God rather than another kind of faith tradition. Okay, excuse me, stop for 1 minute. So let's not lose this time, let's make use of this time. So we've covered those four stages. Maybe just talk to the person next to you for a few minutes. What you understand, what's your experience, where you are at this time. Okay, outlining the four again. So first is chaos. You may still be in chaos, institutionalized. So you just follow. You don't think for yourself. And third is doubt, and four is a mystic. So where are you at? Institutionalized. So not thinking for yourself, basically. Fear. actually is there and institutionalized too. Afraid to doubt. Afraid to be different.
So is it a mistake? Like an absolute, you're unshakable
and
immovable, you're there.
No. What you're closest to, okay? So just so we make use of the time while they sort out. Is this translation okay now?
No.
So just talk in twos or threes, okay, about these four stages. I'll repeat them again. So first is chaos. C-H-A-O-S. Lost. You can say lost, okay? Confused. Lost, confused. Two is institutionalized. Yes, sir. No, sir. You're right, sir. Like, just very... And three is doubt. And four is mystic. But that's good. I'll get some pens for next time. Good. So just a few more minutes. 2 minutes. All right. Hello. Om Shanti. So, unfortunately, the translation for the Vietnamese group is not working. So, I know we love them very much, and so we won't mind moving to the meditation hall tomorrow if we can. Okay? We'll move to the meditation hall. Is it available tomorrow? We have to see, but they can then use the translation system. So they've got the notes anyway, so they're going to the other room and they're going to do what we are doing on their own. And we'll meet up tomorrow. Which Gopi? Gopi Elton. She's here. Gopi Elton might be able to change venues. You're doing a workshop tomorrow morning? Yeah, no, that's 17th, yeah. Okay, so... Okay, so we'll be in the meditation hall tomorrow. Okay, so then they can join us. Okay, so how was that discussion? Any comments, questions you'd like to... raise? Yeah, comment.
Yeah, we really appreciated these four stages and we saw them as cyclical. It's not that I go through it, but one day I'm in one and another day I'm in another. And to really also be able to appreciate that other Brahmins, no matter how many years in Gyan, they may at that moment be in a different stage in this cycle than I am. So we have to be sensitive to that.
So, I thought those stages are something that can happen every day. and totally agree with what you just said. And I think, as Moni was saying, you know, it's sort of like embracing it. So even if we're in a state of conflict, because there'll be inner conflict, there'll be external conflict, and we just have to work with it and do what we can do and get all our resources happening and be courageous.
No, it's okay. Anyone else? Otherwise, we'll move on. Yeah, so just before moving on from this first part of it, this is a very interesting, some of you might have been there in London, but Denise was interviewed by Neville, and she said something very interesting, I found, because she said that she does not belong to any institution. She belongs to a yajna. And this yajna has an institution, but it is not an institution. I really feel that because I surrendered my life to the yajna. I didn't surrender it to an institution, actually. That worries me. but I surrendered it to the yajna. And the yajna needs an institution. It's a very valuable thing. We couldn't be here without an institution. It needs so much management. But we should never forget that I belong to the yajna. Does that make sense, or does it need more clarification? Yeah. Yeah, so yajna meaning, well, the way she was talking about it also specifically, is that this is a fire. You know, I'm in a fire, and this is a very deep and really a very mystical practice. It's not, we're not ordinary. I often used to think that when I go to work, that you go to work, you turn up at the same time as everyone else. They had no idea what you've been doing from 4 o'clock in the morning. They had no idea you've been up at 3:30, meditating at 4, been to class, and come. You just turn up at work just like everyone else. And because we often feel we need to keep that little bit, you know, to the side, we don't talk about it. We just, people don't know what we're up to. We are very mystical, right? Even that time in the morning, 4 o'clock, is a very mystical time. Everything about us is actually mystical. We are not normal. We're not ordinary, right? And like Baba says, we're an incognito army. Like the world doesn't know what we're up to, right? It's very exciting when you think of, you know, who we are, but that is all quite connected to the yajna. And the institution supports the yajna. You know, because we need all of this infrastructure. We need a microphone. I mean, all these things are part of the organization, you know. But also what Denise was in particular saying, that we need to value people of the yajna who are working on the level of the yajna and not necessarily on the level of the institution, because, you know, sometimes we give importance to people with titles and positions, and I could be a good center coordinator because I'm a good administrator. It doesn't mean I'm a good yogi, you know. So I really like that aspect too, because it helps me to have respect for those people who are doing the work rather than just, you know, holding a title or a position. And recently, I don't know if you know Sister Chrissy from Australia. She's a deeply spiritual and amazingly connected human being, but she doesn't live in a center. Chrissy Marnie, yeah. And she was recently invited to Korea to do a retreat, and I thought, and it's not that usual, you know, they usually invite someone with a title, you know, and I just thought, how amazing, and they absolutely loved it and took so much sustenance, because sometimes our sustenance needs to come from people that are really in the yajna, not necessarily in the institution. And that's what Denise said. She said, I have no title, I've got no position, which is true, and I think that's perfect, so that she can remind us maybe of the yajna. But very nice to see that. She said, just as the soul has a body, the yajna has an institution. So I'm not a body, I'm not an institution. I'm a soul that has a body, I'm a yajna being that has an institution to support that. Yeah. 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 Yes. Yes. Deep and funny. I mean, her funny is often also very, very deep. She, yeah. So there's many people out there, many people out there that don't have positions that can give very deep sustenance. So, and whether, you know, we want to invite them to our countries, I'm not saying that. I'm just saying to acknowledge and appreciate and recognize, you know, and not, you know, if we just give value to the institution, sometimes these people don't get... And it's interesting because we have, like, I'm organizing the NCCC. If you are not an NCCC, a National Coordinator or Center Coordinator, you are not invited. But that is not wrong also, because that is predominantly administrative and you can't have everyone, you know, like there's got to be a cutoff, right? You can already wear like 400, you know, if you added all these people, and then people would say, why that one? Why not me? Right? So, you know, we really need to appreciate that it has to be an institution. It has to be, because it's hard to function otherwise, but that's only at one level, you know? It's only at one level. It's not on the sustenance level, the yajna level, you know? So I think it's a very good point to embrace for me and to not forget. And I don't know if you saw the video that was put together by London for 18th of January last year. If you didn't, I'll try and share it with you somehow, because it shows that it's Madhuban, but it shows the Dadis and Dadi Prakash. Just to remind you what it was, Dadi Prakash Mani is telling a joke about the tea. The tea? No, so you haven't seen it. I might try and show it because it's really beautiful. And the other one is that Dadi Nirmal Shanta is telling us the story of how she got in the pot. Right? And then in the video. And then she says, should I show you? And she's like 80 years old. She says, should I show you? So she gets up and goes, yeah. And I think, when I saw that, that's what gave me the feeling, this is what I surrendered my life to. You know? And that was my reminder, actually, seeing that video. I thought, yeah, these are the people I surrendered to. This is the spirit of this innocent purity, obedience, you know, whatever we see in the Dadis, you know, it captures it so beautifully. So I'll see how we can share it to all of you, because it's, you know, it's just a little 10-minute clip. Okay, so what are the three, according to what I think, the three main steps of becoming a mystic? First of all, I would say surrender. I know it's a big one, start with surrender. But I read a quote, and there's no one who's been... it's an anonymous quote. And the quote is that you can make spiritual effort for years and years, or you can surrender. Right? If we are not surrendering... we're beating around the bush. We're just like a little bit like Baba says, the moth that's circling around, but the one that surrenders sacrifices on the flame, you know, willing to do that. So you can make efforts for years and years, or you can surrender. Very much. Yeah. Actually, I do a whole workshop on surrender based on my experience, because, you know, you get tripped up many times along the path of surrendering. But one very interesting thing is that if you Google the signs of someone who is codependent, you know, there's signs of someone who's codependent. It absolutely looks like the signs of a surrendered soul. I read that during the workshop. I read it and I said, does this sound like a surrendered soul? Everyone says, oh, yeah. I said, actually, they're the signs of someone who's codependent. Codependent. Codependent means that you've handed over your power and you're dependent, you know, like codependent. So, like, for example, I might obey everything I'm told by my senior because I want to please. That is not spiritual, that's codependent. If I'm doing it to please, Okay, I'll tell you a little story. I'll tell you a little story on this, and that is that I had a little kind of tussle with Daddy Janki, because I felt that what I thought of myself was different to what she thought of me. And I didn't think she thought much of me, so I thought, this is all my head, right? But I thought, if I accept her vision of me, I'll lose my self-respect. That's what I was thinking at the time. But if I keep my vision of me and disregard hers, I will lose respect for her, you know. And so it was like I didn't know which way to go. And it was in Madhuban, and I went back to Hong Kong, where I was at the time, and we had a yoga bhati. And in the yoga bhati, I really experienced that I died, right? I died. So I wrote to Daddy and I said, I think everything's okay. I died. So whatever you say is okay, you know? And what I think doesn't matter. I used that sentence. And she said, what you think matters very much. And I thought, don't confuse me. Come on. let me just die. You know, this is between that, you know? And what was very interesting is I thought when I met Daddy the next time, I will just say yes, and I would be so... For the first time, I even disagreed directly with her. And I thought... And I realized what I died to was my being worried about her opinion of me. I didn't die to who I am. I died to worrying about what she thinks of me. So since then, we had a very easy relationship, because it doesn't matter what she thinks of me. Like, it doesn't matter. But I was caught in that. Yes. So that's why I do this workshop on surrender, because surrender, I have found, is not what we think it is. Like, that was a very strange outcome for me. You know, like, it's like, oh, it's not what I think. So... Are you following me, sisters? Yeah? That don't speak English that well? You're okay? You're okay? Yeah. So, yeah, it's surrender and dependence, codependence is a very, very fine line. A very fine line. Like, okay, I'm going to say it because I was told to say it. You know, Daddy and Didi used to say, give me completely different directions. Daddy Janki and Didi Nirmala. And when there was more daddies, then more directions. Different. You know. And often about which country I should be in. Like, not small ones. It's like, you know, I've got to pack up and go somewhere, you know, like that kind of thing. So I said to Dr. Nirmala one time, can you and Daddy please agree and give me one direction? Doesn't that make sense? Makes sense, right? Dr. Nirmala said, Daddy and I will never agree. This is what I think. And I thought, huh, really? And that, yeah. And then so I asked, because again, this is to do with surrender. Because surrender, and every day in the Muli we hear, follow Srimat, follow Srimat, follow Srimat, right? That's also like, the surrender. So if these two people are giving different directions, I said, then what's Srimat? Because I thought what you tell me is Srimat, and I should say yes. But if you're both giving me different directions, what's Srimat? And Daddy gave me a very clever answer and didn't answer it, as she's very good at. But Dr. Nirmala, true to her form, very direct, what I say and Daddy says is not Srimat, only what Baba says is Srimat. And I said, you should tell everyone, because for 35 years, I thought what you say is Srimat. So you should tell everyone. And you know what she told me? You tell everyone. So that's why I'm telling you. So I imagine myself standing on the stage in Gyan Sarovar, announcing it, right? It was like, oh yeah, sure, I'm going to tell everyone. So next time I was asked to give a class, I think I gave it on surrender, because that was a confusion in my surrender. If people had asked me to give a class, I could not, because this was confusion for me. I wasn't clear. But when she said that, it made me respect them even more. And they are, you know, 50, 60 years with Baba, 70, 80 years with Baba. It's not that I don't have regard for what their opinion is or what their advice is, you know, but it's their advice based on their wisdom of, you know, great wisdom. So I saw them more as a resource. Like, I'm so lucky to have this wisdom available to me. Not like I have to follow because they're my senior. I mean, to a certain extent we do, because it's an institution. I work for the institution, you know. So if they tell me to go there, it's because the institution needs it, like a job, right? So to a certain extent, there's also that. But the next time I was asked to give a class, I thought, well, it's on surrender. I have to say this, you know. It's part of my realization about this. So I called Mirabai. I said, can I say that what Dadi and Didi says is not Srimat in my class, Sister Mira? She said, yeah, why not? I said, oh, really? So I said it, and I felt somebody's going to come throw me off the stage. I was so scared to say that, because I'd had a belief for so long. But I did a kind of a little survey amongst a lot of seniors, like people who've been in Gyan 30 years and more, and I asked them, do you think what Dadi and Didi says, what the Dadi says, Srimat? 50-50. So I thought, oh, so not everyone believes that it's Srimat anyway. It was very 50-50. It wasn't that everyone believed that. Huh? I was naive, she says. Yeah, possibly. So, yeah, surrender's deep. Surrender's much more. And I'm happy to share any of these notes. But interestingly, I'm not advertising, but I've just finished writing a book called Mystics at the Edge. That's why I thought it was interesting. They asked me to do this topic out of 20 topics, because, and it's all in the book, not yet. It's all in the book, because, you know, it's all experiences. So anyway, surrender. And there's a lot to surrender. It's very deep. It's very personal. And yeah, it should be clearer, I think, because that's what we're trying to do. Then the second is courage, and Igidia said that that's what I would agree is my speciality, because Baba always used to tell me about courage and tell me I'm a sample of courage, so I have to believe him, right? He's saying he's God, so that's Srimat. You are an example of courage. Yeah, but, you know, really, anyone who's going to walk the path of their truth needs courage. Because often when you are doing what you feel is right, it's not going along with the mainstream. It's keeping your own values very much at the forefront and feeling that that's what's the most important thing, that I live my values. And, you know, that keeps us, it's all very, very connected with truth. Third one is truth, but courage and truth are almost go hand in hand, because if you're courageous, you will live truth. And if you want to be live truth, you have to be courageous. And because Baba used to say this to me all the time, I thought, why does Baba always say I'm courageous? I'm not very brave. You know, I faint at the sight of blood. I'm not very brave. But I read a saying, and it said, courage doesn't mean that you're not afraid. Courage is when you see where you're going, where you intend to go, and you don't see anything else. That courage I have. I have a blind courage. You know, and very often I've done things because I have a vision for it, and in the middle I go, my goodness, how could I have started on this? You know, how could, you know, I have even thought of I can do this, but it's already too late. I'm already halfway. Huh? Both, physical also. Like I organized, for example, this big Asian women's convention in Hong Kong when I was like 26 years old, like a few years in Gyan. And because I was so innocent, because there was everyone we invite to be a speaker said yes, we had it for 3 days, right? I mean, because we couldn't fit them all on one day. This is, and all these people came from all over Asia, and in fact even from London, and all these seniors came, like Dadi Manohar and Noerbai and Didi Nirmala and Dr. Hansa Raval and da, da, da. All these people came, and we didn't know how to plan. We didn't even think of who's going to drive them and who's going to cook for them. We were two little girls. But everything worked, you know, amazingly. You know, that's a long story, but everything worked. And in the middle of it, this sister and I looked at each other. She was younger and less experienced than me. We looked at each other and said, did we organize this? It was like, really? It was absolutely perfect. Absolutely perfect. 3 days. And if you ask me today where the money came from, because it was in a 5-star hotel, I don't know. I don't even remember. I don't know. I didn't know how to think about those things. You just do it. So when, that's why Baba says, when you have courage, God helps. And because I experienced that in my early days, I can't help it. I can't help but have that courage, because it's the way to get things done. And it leads on to another saying that I read from the Tao Te Ching, the Chinese philosophy and Taoism. It says, few leaders realize how little they have to do. Few leaders realize how little they have to do. And that's my experience. Like now I'm in Taiwan. I went there with no language, no money. I knew one person. But Baba's done it all. And I don't really do anything. I just say yes and give blessing cards. That's all I do. Really, literally. They have all these ideas, these people that hardly speak English, and I just say, yeah, okay. You know, it's like ridiculous. You know, I mean, you can't make any logic of it. And that's what also we will be exploring, the limitation of logic. Because if we try to be too logical, we can't experience magic. Right? And yet we're brought up to be so logical, logical, logical. So, yeah. And truth. So truth is a big thing, but it's already nearly, it's 25-2. So I've got two reflections. One is on truth and one is on wisdom. So what I've done is I've put a copy of this in bigger print on the back wall, as well as the program on the window there. And if you've got your phone with you, do most of you have your phone with you? You can take a photo. I thought, that's, use technology. So you can take a photo, and it's a reflection on truth and on wisdom. But just to add a few more things before we go into that. So another thing is about a mystic. A mystic lives in the light. So living in the light means that I am not in illusion, because darkness is basically illusion. Even the word Maya really means illusion. And what's the illusion? What's the illusion with Maya? That we think we can get something from ego. We think we can, we need it. We think we need anger, greed, right? You just think about it. The whole world believes that they need these things. They need lust. They need anger. They need ego. Need attachment. It's all illusion. So this is another nice quote. If you want to suffer, follow an illusion. I'll say it at the end. Such a path only leads to more illusion. Is it right? If you want to suffer, follow an illusion. Such a path only leads to more illusions. And just think of any suffering you've had. Somewhere in there, there's some illusions, right? So, some things to reflect on. That's Carolyn Meese. Carolyn Meese, M-Y-S-S. And I'm going to give a handout tomorrow of 3 pages of her... It's an extract from her book called Entering the Castle. And it's her understanding, but of course in very condensed form, of Teresa of Avila. Teresa of Avila is recognized as a mystic by the Christian faith. And she used to do this work with her nuns entering the castle. So it's all about the castle of your being and, you know, the dungeons and the moats and all these kinds of things, you know, dragons and all of these things, the illusions. So, but this is just a very condensed version of just 3 pages, but a lot of interesting, beautiful things to reflect on. And in the silence walk tomorrow, we're also going to use some quotes like this in our walk. Because often these kinds of things are very, what we call dense, very deep, and like they need to be experimented with. Not, you can't just read them. Like you read them, you go, like Avyakt Mulis. You can't just read an Avyakt Muli, right? You've got to digest it and churn it and think about it. So we're going to use some of these quotes, and in our silence walk in Dadijenki Park, we're going to exchange them with each other every so often. You can hold yours and not give it to anyone, but then you won't get another one. But if you really get attached to one, you can keep it. But just exchange it at will. So in silence, we can do a little bit of reflection on these, because, she goes very deeply into this stage of the mystic and grace, which is a very big thing for the mystic. So let me just read these two reflections, but you don't need to write them. They're at the back, so you can... But if you don't have your phone, you might have to write them, or you can write them from there. So these are also from her book. But something to reflect, you know, a chart for today. On truth, did I compromise speaking the truth in any way today? This is your chart for tonight. If so, how? And the important thing is, why? Right? Why did I compromise my truth? Because that gives us a lot of insight into where we're a bit stuck. Maybe because we want to look good. Maybe because we wanted to impress, it could be. Secondly, do I fear truth? Is it difficult for people to share their insights about me? Can I listen to other people? Do I fear truth in that sense? Not everyone's right in what they tell you, but there's some people... And it's good to have some people in your life that you know will give you honest feedback. But do I fear that? You know, Baba used to hold court, right? Amazing. What was it that enabled them all to, you know, it wasn't just people sharing what they did, But if they didn't share, somebody else would say, I saw so-and-so do this. And they could keep their good relationships with that. Maybe we'll have a court tomorrow night. I don't know. Have any of you tried it? You'd love to. Yeah. What do I believe that I know is not true, but hold on to anyway? It's funny because it's silly, but we do it. We're all funny. Why do these illusions have such power over me? Why do these illusions have such power over me? We know that they're not a truth, and yet we still can't let it go. Like status and position is one of those. We know it's not right, right, to hanker after it or hold on to it or whatever, and yet, yeah. What truth would I like to make a part of my inner life? What truths would I like to make a part of my inner life? Look for the truth in action in my life. Live by it, live in it, live with it. So what truth do I want to make a part of my life? That's not an easy one, is it? You really have to, yeah. And then the last one, ask to be shown the truth within myself that I never harm others with my illusions. Ask to be shown the truth within myself that I never harm others with my illusions. Ooh. Yeah, yeah. Yeah, yeah. Ask to be shown the truth within myself that I never harm others with my illusions. Yeah, so gopis, so that I never hurt others with my illusions. So like Gopi said, it's like, why do I give sorrow? Must be based on some illusion I have, right? Ah. Yeah, and taking sorrow is based on my illusion. And what I'll just give you a little hint from the other writings that we'll be sharing, and that is that she says one of the biggest illusions or the things that we believe is, I deserve. I deserve. A lot is rooted in that, and I have a right. It's kind of similar, but yeah, that's spiritually not. But that's a very interesting thing you're bringing up, because we do have rights, and sometimes we don't take enough from Baba. Because we don't take our right. That's a very interesting one. So, and we think that we should share, you know, so we don't want to jump in. You know, I always struggled with that because in the mornings we used to go and say good morning to Daddy Janki and it got quite crowded. So I stopped going so that others could have a chance because I'd been going for years. And Daddy said, you didn't come and say good morning. I said, I want to give chance to others. Oh, did she tell me off? You know, but in a sense she said, no, whatever you take, you will share with others. You know, like, but I feel it's a little bit like I have a right, but what about others? You know, because there's limitations, right? Space and everything. So, but don't, you know, I'm often not taking my right, I would say, you know, because I don't. Whereas others take their right, and sometimes it's too much, and sometimes it's just right. So, yeah, good thing to think about, rights, another deep one. And wisdom, okay, these are points on wisdom to reflect on. But first of all, a quote from Carolyn that spoke to me very deeply. You can learn from wisdom or woe. Woe means, oh, poor me. Oh, why did this happen to me? So you can learn from wisdom or from woe. Woe is when you take things personally. So much sorrow I take because I take things personally. I don't have to. I don't need to. It's just a habit. So these are the reflections.
Is it all for tomorrow morning?
It's for tonight, your chart. Yeah, but you can do it every night for as long as you think you still need to do it. Yeah, one is enough, right? Just one is enough. Yeah. Okay, wisdom. Okay, the first reflection. When something happens, right? I can either take wisdom or woe. So the first reflection, what wisdom is hidden in this? What wisdom is hidden in this? Secondly, what is the wise way for me to respond? What is the wise way for me to respond? Wise. The wise way, the most wise, the wise way. Not from woe, but from wisdom. What is the wise way? I can respond woefully. How could you do that to me? You know I'm... What changes are happening that are necessary? What changes are happening that are necessary? Could be external changes, like, you know, in Sydney we handed over to the youth. It's so necessary, but it didn't come without its woes. That could have been more wisdoms, but, you know, but so many things are necessary and yet we, you know, find it hard to let go or to move on or to understand what changes are happening that are necessary. What changes am I fighting that are bringing me pain? What changes am I fighting that are bringing me pain? The next one, if I am in pain, am I taking something personally that has nothing to do with me? And often the person will be attacking you, but it has nothing to do with you. So am I, if I'm in pain, am I taking something personally that has nothing to do with me? Yeah, but am I? It's a question. Yeah. Am I blaming someone for something that would have happened anyway? If not this person, if not here, then it's my journey, right? It would have happened anyway. But that person was the instrument. good reflection. So, as I said, you can make a photo of these on your phone. So you've got a little chart. So we've just got a few minutes before meditation. Any comments, questions?
Just in that list that Moni just read, the one about deserving and checking to see whether I'm thinking I deserve, like having rights and that, but another side of it could also be that the thinking I don't deserve. Yeah, like that sort of thinking as well.